Caring Review, print speaking to the blind, celebrating 40 years of audio newspaper production. Welcome to this week's edition of the Glasgow Times podcast, recorded at the Bishop Briggs Media Centre by our amazing volunteers. You can get in touch with us via Facebook, Twitter or Instagram using @QNReview, that is @CUENDREVIEW. You can also contact us directly by emailing information@qnreview.com. That is information@CUENDREVIEW.com. Or by calling 0141 772 3976. That's 0141 772 3976.
From the Glasgow Times, Friday the 15th of March, from the news section, body of man is discovered. This article is unattributed. The body of a man has been found in extensive police searches. We previously reported that Robert Drysdale had been missing from Johnston since Friday, March the 8th. The 58-year-old was last seen in Glenpatrick Road, Elderslie, at around 12 p.m. Officers were carrying out searches for Robert and have now confirmed that a body has been found. While he has not been formally identified, Robert's family have been informed. Cops are treating the death as unexplained, but they do not believe that there to be any suspicious circumstances. A spokesperson said, "The body of a man has been found during searches for missing 58-year-old Robert Drysdale from Johnston. He is yet to be formally identified, but his next of kin has been informed." And that article was unattributed. From the Glasgow Times, Friday the 15th of March, from the news section, City area is hailed as one of the best spots in the UK to live. Report by Kirsty Feerick. A Glasgow spot has been hailed as one of the best places to live in the UK. The Sunday Times Best Places to Live Guide 2024 has named Newlands as one of the most desirable postcodes in the country. The Southside community scooped an area winner title, while North Berwick was crowned the best overall place in Britain. We visited Newlands to ask residents why they think the area made the list. Marie Darrock, 53, owner of the Dandelion Cafe, said, "I grew up in this area, so I've always had an affinity with it. We opened the cafe 9 years ago, and now it is a social hub in the heart of Newlands. The full area is super friendly and laid back. Most people tend to live here for quite a long time. It isn't a congested area, and there's lots of green spaces. There is a real relaxed vibe with a gentler pace of life." Dog walker Dave Miller, 36, said, "I live in Newlands. It is a really nice place to stay. It is very quiet with lots of families and has lots of great places to walk the dog. It is a nice place to have a house. It isn't surprising at all that it was voted on the list." Ian McBean, 80, said, "I have lived in Newlands for more than 30 years now. It is a really pleasant place to live. I come to the park a lot and also I brought my dog, which I had until recently. You meet a lot of people here. It is a nice area. I am not surprised at all that it was voted a nice place to live. It is convenient for the town and for shopping. It is very good." Steph Stern, 39, was out walking with her 10-month-old baby Hannah Stern, along with Daniel Stern, 36, when she spoke to the Glasgow Times. She said, "I live here and think Newlands is definitely worth being voted for. I am on maternity leave and I come to the park almost every day. It is a great cafe and it is just a great place to live. We love the South Side, but especially Newlands." Brian Laidlaw said, "The park is so nice and it is always well maintained. It is very handy and it feels safe here, which means a lot. I live on my own now and I have a garden, but I prefer coming to the park. I mostly just come out myself, but you do sometimes speak to people, or I come with friends occasionally." George Carmichael, 71, works nearby at Fur and Feathers Pet Shop and said, "I am right next door to Newlands. It is a very nice area with a lovely public park. It is very well maintained. It is a nice area to live in and handy for the city centre. It has good public transport like trains and buses, as well as lovely housing. Everyone seems to be very happy there. I think it is one of the better parts of the city. Helen Davies, Editorial Projects Director and Best Places to Live Editor, said, "There are places where you can feel grounded as well as upwardly mobile. They have a mature sense of community, lively, supportive high streets and an eye to the future, whether that is eco-friendly measures, transport and regeneration, or imaginative inclusion of new housing." And that story was written by Kirsty Feerick. From the Glasgow Times, Friday the 15th of March, from the news section, "Man approached bus for help after being stabbed." This article is unattributed. An injured person approached a Glasgow bus for help after being stabbed in the East End. The 41-year-old man was walking on Shettleston Road at around 6:30pm on Wednesday with serious injuries. Seeking aid, they rushed over to First Glasgow's number 60 service, which was stationary on the road at the time. 999 crews arrived soon after, and we reported that a heavy police presence was seen in the area, with tape around the bus and multiple cop vehicles parked on Shettleston Road. Uniform and plainclothes cops were seen near the bus carrying out investigations. The road was locked down at around 6:45pm on Wednesday and reopened this morning shortly after 7am, according to Glasgow City Council traffic officers. Cops confirmed the man was rushed to hospital and that an investigation has been launched into the shocking attack. A Police Scotland spokesperson said, "We received a report of a disturbance on Shettleston Road, Glasgow, around 6:20pm on Wednesday, March 13th, 2024. Emergency services attended and a 41-year-old man was taken to hospital for treatment. Inquiries are ongoing." A spokesperson for First Bus said, "We can confirm emergency services attended to an injured pedestrian who approached one of our vehicles shortly before 6:30pm last night for help. The pedestrian approached the stationary service 60 bus in the Shettleston area of the city and the emergency services were almost instantly in attendance. Our thoughts are with the injured person and we wish to thank our customers for their understanding during the incident." A Scottish Ambulance Service spokesperson said, "We received a call at 6:20pm on Wednesday to attend an incident in Shettleston Road. We dispatched two ambulances, a critical care paramedic and our trauma team to the scene. We transported one male patient in his 40s to Queen Elizabeth University Hospital." And that article was unattributed. From the Glasgow Times, Friday the 15th of March, from the news section, "Neighbour heard frightening noise from flat in murder trial. Report by Connor Gordon." A woman claimed she heard a frightening noise coming from the flat where a man was allegedly murdered by his son. Elizabeth Jameson, 70, claimed she was woken up in the early hours from the flat above in Bearsden on January the 27th, 2020. Miss Jameson added that loud noise was followed by the sound of beads falling or smashed glass. Another resident in the flat block also claimed to have heard banging and a thump that night. Lewis Webster, 23, is on trial at the High Court in Glasgow, accused of murdering Michael Webster at his flat. The charge claims Webster, of Aberdeen, repeatedly struck him in the head and neck with knives. Webster faces a separate charge of attempting to defeat the ends of justice by placing a knife in Michael Webster's hands after he died. The court yesterday heard from Miss Jameson, who went to bed around 11:30pm on January 26th. She stated she became aware of noises of boxes moving or items moved in Michael Webster's flat around 12:30am. The witness claimed she also heard the veranda door open and close, which went on until 3am. Prosecutor Paul Kearney asked Miss Jameson if around 4am she heard a different sound and she replied, "Yes." The witness said, "It was a loud noise, I must have dozed off, it frightened me. I felt myself jump because of the loudness of the noise." Mr. Kearney asked, "How would you describe the noise?" Miss Jameson said, "When I heard it, I thought it could be someone or something falling. I did also hear the sound of beads falling, but I said in my police statement that it could have been glass in retrospect." The witness added that she heard the sound of the veranda door open after the glass noise. Another neighbour, Sandra Groves, 73, who lived above Michael Webster, claimed she heard banging and crashing coming from a property in the block. Her police statement was read to the jury, which said, "I was just getting out of my bed and I heard a loud bang. It was like a thump as if something was falling." The witness stated she did not know if the noise came from the flat below or above. Her police statement went on to say, "I got up and used the toilet and went back to bed, but I didn't sleep much after that. I then heard the lift going up and down around 4 a.m. and then 4 or 5 bangs, which I thought was a door being banged open." John Scully and KC, defending, put it to the witness that she initially told police that she thought it came from the flat above. Miss Groves replied, "That's correct." The trial continues before Judge Lord Matthews, and that report was by Connor Gordon. From the Glasgow Times, Friday the 15th of March, from the news section, "Predator raped man intent on banks of Clyde." Article by Dave Finlay. A sex attacker who raped two vulnerable men was jailed for 8 years after a judge branded him a cruel and cynical sexual predator. Gavin Shand attacked his first victim at a house in Inverness after the man fell asleep before telling him when he awoke, "I know you wanted it." Shand carried out a second sex assault on another man in a tent on the banks of the River Clyde in Glasgow while the victim was under the influence of heroin. A judge told Shand at the High Court in Edinburgh, "The circumstances of this case have amply demonstrated that you are a cruel and cynical sexual predator." Judge Michael O'Grady, KC, said, "You have a nose for a vulnerable victim and an eye for an opportunity." The judge said the background report prepared on him showed he accepted no responsibility and displayed no remorse or concern. He said that Shan's behaviour was appalling and ordered that he should be kept under supervision for a further 4-year period when he will be subject to licence in the community and can be returned to prison if he breaches its conditions. Shand, 45, had denied a series of charges during an earlier trial but was found guilty of 2 rape charges, 2 further sex offences and attempting to defeat the ends of justice. He attacked and raped his first victim, who was in his 60s, at an address in Inverness on an occasion between January and August 2022, when the man was sleeping and incapable of giving or withholding consent. The victim told a carer who visited him at his home that he had awoken to find Shand having sex with him. He said Shand told him, "I know you wanted it." Shand also exposed himself while he was at the house and asked the victim to perform oral sex on him. The second victim met the sex offender in Glasgow in August 2022. He said Shand was looking for a place to use drugs while he needed someone to help him get a fix. The victim, who was in his 30s, said he thought he was lucky at the time of the chance encounter and offered to take him to a junkie den. He said he passed out after being injected the drug and came round to find Shand carrying out a sex act on him. He said, "I tried to push him back off me." Shand carried out the sex attack and rape on the man at a tent in the south embankment of the River Clyde near Glasgow Sheriff Court. The victim described how Shand offered him money and drugs to keep quiet about the sexual assault. Defence counsel John Brannigan told the court that he thought that custody was the inevitable disposal in this case, and that the judge said, "We can both agree on that." Mr. Brannigan said Shand's life was blighted by addiction issues, but was assessed as suitable for an offender programme aimed at making changes. Shand was placed on the Sex Offenders Register. And that article was by Dave Finlay.
From Glasgow Times, Friday, 15th of March, Lifestyle section. "Major Hollywood actor to star alongside Glasgow star," by Rosie Lewis. A major Hollywood actor is set to appear alongside a Glasgow star as part of a new Netflix film. 50 Shades of Grey star Jamie Dornan will soon appear on screen with Ian de Kesteker for their new movie The Undertow, the Scottish Sun reports. The production,
which is yet to receive a release date, will be filmed in multiple locations across the Highlands and Islands, including the Isle of Mull. The movie follows couple Adam and Nicola's loveless marriage before it takes a deadly turn when his long-estranged identical twin brother Lee comes crashing back into their life. When a terrible accident leaves Adam dead, Nicola and her old flame Lee make a pact for him to assume his brother's identity, hoping to convince police investigators that Lee died instead. Jamie from Northern Ireland will be playing twin brother Adam and Lee alongside Canadian actress Mackenzie Davis as Adam's wife Nicola, while Glasgow-born actor Ian de Kesteker, open brackets, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., close brackets, will portray a cop called Marty who is best mates with Lee. That article was written by Rosie Lewis. From Glasgow Times, Friday, 15th of March, Lifestyle section. McDonald's down, major IT outage causes store closures, by Patrick Glover. McDonald's appears to have been hit by a major IT outage, which has resulted in the closure of a number of restaurants, including in the UK. Problems with IT and the McDonald's app have been reported worldwide, including in the UK, this morning, Friday, March the 15th. Downtector has seen people issue reports of problems with the McDonald's app and website. One person on Downtector said, "All Mackies in UK, including Ireland, down." Another commented, "McDonald's reporting national outages in the United States, UK and Australia. Some places are shut down, unable to take orders." Customers have also taken to social media this morning, sharing pictures and stories about McDonald's store closures. One person posted a photo on X, formerly Twitter, of a closed McDonald's, which had a sign on the door reading, "We cannot take any orders, our systems are down. This is a national issues ATM. Sorry for the inconvenience." Another person posting on X said, "Unfortunate news for McDonald's fans. Technical glitches caused major outage, disabling orders." More information to follow. McDonald's Australia said in a statement, "It is aware of a technology outage currently impacting our restaurants nationwide and are working to resolve this issue as soon as possible, and apologise to customers for the inconvenience caused." The official McDonald's Japan X account has also confirmed that its stores are experiencing a systems failure, adding, "Please wait for a while until the service is restored." That article was written by Patrick Glover. From Glasgow Times, Friday, 15th March, Lifestyle section. Paisley Museum refurbishment wins prestigious international award, by Craig Williams. The refurbishment of Paisley Museum has won a prestigious international award, recognising the significant role the project is playing in the town and wider region's cultural regeneration. Architects ALA won the cultural regeneration category at the AR Future Projects 2024 awards, organised by global architectural magazine, The Architectural Review. Paisley Museum was on a shortlist of 13 projects, including cultural giants such as the Prado Museum in Madrid, the Shanghai Opera House, the Balboa Fine Arts Museum, and the New Maritime Museum in Karamursel, Turkey. The £45 million refurbishment of Paisley Museum is part of a once-in-a-generation investment by Renfrewshire Council in four key cultural assets in the town. In the last 6 months, the town has welcomed the reopening of Paisley Town Hall following a £22 million refurbishment and the unveiling of the new home of Paisley Central Library, with a £7 million makeover of what was previously a vacant retail space on the High Street. Paisley Arts Centre is currently being refurbished and will open in early summer before Paisley Museum reopens in 2025. ELA, whose previous works include the MAAT Contemporary Museum in Lisbon and the Exhibition Road Quarter at the V&A in London, have led the design process, including a new extension to the original 1871 museum. Matt Wilkinson from ALA said, "This project is deeply connected with the community. Our work here re-images Paisley Museum as an exceptional place that will create new energy and have a lasting impact on the town." Renfrewshire Council's radical approach to the cultural regeneration has become a beacon for communities across Europe. It has set the bar very high. ELA's founder, Stirling Prize winner Amanda Lavetti, has described the Paisley Museum re-imaged project as "one of the most radical briefs I have read. This is not only about finding the way to best show the museum's collection, it's also about showing the world how an ambitious cultural project can have a profound impact on a community and its identity." The museum refurbishment, which is being billed as Scotland's biggest cultural heritage project, is funded by Renfrewshire Council, the National Lottery Heritage Fund, the Scottish Government and Historic Environment Scotland. A charitable fundraising campaign has been supported by a number of trusts, foundations and corporate donors. The project is being led by One Wren, the local charity delivering culture and leisure at Renfrewshire. Councillor Lisa Marie Hughes, Renfrewshire Council's cultural spokesperson and the chair of One Wren, said, "We've always said we will deliver a world-class museum with community at its heart, and to win an international award before we've even opened is testament to our ambition for culture-led regeneration of Paisley. I want to thank ALA and indeed all of the project team who are working so hard to bring new life to the town's museum." Woodren's project director, Kirsty Devine, said, "We are building a museum that is engaged with its communities in a way that will continue long after we reopen our doors. This award recognises the impact that the project will have in revitalising the local area through investment in our cultural treasures. We can't wait to show the world our new museum in 2025. That article was written by Craig Williams.
From the Glasgow Times, Tuesday the 19th of March, from the news section, £2 million fraud discovered. This article is unattributed. Two men have been arrested after cops discovered an alleged fraudulent scheme worth £2 million operating in Glasgow. Police say they've been investigating several bank frauds since last September, with victims reporting information being used to bypass bank security to access their accounts. Officers claim offences were reported in both Glasgow and Manchester. According to cops, the total value of the frauds being investigated is now around £2 million. Now the duo, aged 36 and 45, have been arrested and charged in connection. Both men are set to appear at Glasgow Sheriff Court at a later date. The investigation was supported by Operation Henhouse, a National Economic Crime Centre initiative to provide funding to allow forces to undertake additional operational activity against fraudsters. Detective Sergeant John Fagan of Police Scotland's Economic Crime and Financial Investigation Unit said, "Following an extensive inquiry and with the assistance of our colleagues at Greater Manchester Police and the North West Regional Organised Crime Unit, two men have been arrested for the offences. This underlines our commitment to tackling fraudsters who target people in our communities and reassure the public that Police Scotland officers work tirelessly and in partnership with our law enforcement and banking industry colleagues to investigate financial crimes, and that article was unattributed. From the Glasgow Times, Tuesday the 19th of March, from the news section, hit and run victim guilty of assault and robbery, report by Connor Gordon. A woman ambushed a man months after she was a victim of an alleged hit and run, which left her fighting for her life. Alicia Fairns, 32, and an unknown man pounced on Michael Kelly at Glasgow's Barmulloch on November the 10th last year. Mr. Kelly took a taxi with the two strangers, and his wallet was snatched by Fairns after leaving the vehicle. The unknown man went to punch and kick the stricken victim to the head and body, leaving him scarred for life. The incident took place 5 months after Fairns was ran over near the city centre, which received media coverage at the time. Fairns was rushed to Queen Elizabeth University Hospital, where she was left in a coma. She left hospital in October 2023 and did not receive adequate follow-up medical care. Fairns pleaded guilty at Glasgow Sheriff Court to assault and robbery of Mr. Kelly, to his severe injury and permanent disfigurement. The court heard that Mr. Kelly had been out with friends drinking before he met Fairns and the unknown man. The trio agreed to take a taxi to Barmulloch. Prosecutor Emma Baker said, once out of the taxi, the victim took his wallet out of his pocket. As he did this, Fairns snatched it, and the man assaulted him by punching him in the head and then kicked his head and body. Local residents hearing the disturbance contacted the police. Mr. Kelly was found with a number of injuries to his face. He stated that he had £40 in his wallet as well as bank cards. A bag which contained a pair of jeans he purchased that day was also taken. The victim was then taken to hospital where he was treated with stitches for wound to his right eye and left lip. He also suffered a wound to his head as well as a gash to his elbow. Miss Baker added, Mr. Kelly has since confirmed that he has been left with a scar on his lip. Mark Dunbar, defending, told the court, Miss Fairns was found unconscious in Bell Street in June 2023. This received considerable press coverage about the body of an unidentified woman found unconscious. She was identified through her dental records. She was in a coma for around 10 weeks and she remained in hospital for a considerable period of time. Miss Fairns left hospital in October 2023. This was not suitable for her requirements and was not getting extensive medical care she should have been getting, then she descended into the illicit use of drugs. The plea is agreed on the basis that she grabbed Mr. Kelly's wallet and his bag. She accepts being part of the responsibility that comes with that. She was not the main actor in this fairly crude expedition. Sheriff Gerard Bonner jailed Fairns, who appeared from custody for 14 months. He said, obviously this is a serious matter, more serious given your record. I will impose custody today. And that report was by Connor Gordon. From the Glasgow Times, Tuesday the 19th of March, from the news section, man tells murder trial he stabbed his father. Report by Connor Gordon. A man told a murder trial that he stabbed his father in the neck with a knife. Lewis Webster, 23, is accused at the High Court in Glasgow of murdering Michael Webster at his home in Bearsden on January the 27th, 2021. The charge claims Webster, of Aberdeen, struck him on the head with a bottle, as well as repeatedly struck him in the head and neck with knives. Webster faces a separate charge of attempting to defeat the ends of justice by placing a knife in Michael Webster's hands and breaking a bottle after he died. The court heard from Webster, who got back in contact with his engineer father after a period of time in 2021. He stated that Michael Webster initially helped him sort out debt to phone companies in December 2021. John Scullion, KC, defending, asked his client how he was getting on with his father at the time and had replied, I would say well. Webster stated that he went for dinner and drinks with Michael Webster before going back to his father's home to stay the night. He claimed that he drank beer while his father had wine. The pair shared vodka. Webster stated that he was a bit drunk while his father became intoxicated later that night. Webster claimed that Michael Webster mumbled and claimed his own father committed suicide, which he had never heard before. As the night went on, Webster stated he left the kitchen to vape on the balcony before returning to see Michael Webster seated with a knife in his hand at the side of his leg. Webster claimed his dad said, "I know what you have done," but did not know what he was speaking about. He stated that he asked Michael Webster to put the knife down and to give him the keys, but he refused. Michael Webster allegedly stated, "You're not going anywhere." Webster claimed that he was scared and stiff before he then picked up a knife and pointed it at his father. He allegedly stated to Michael Webster, "Drop the knife and give me the keys." Webster claimed his father lunged out of his chair while holding the knife and stated, "I'm going to F asterisk 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 ing kill you." Webster stated he held his left arm out to block and protect himself. Mr. Scully asked his client how Michael Webster expressed himself, and he replied, "The way an animal looks at you, it was a ghostly stare. I don't know if he thought it was me or not. It was scary." Webster later stated, "I didn't know if he was speaking to his dad or thought I was his dad or something like that." He went on to claim that he and his father met in the middle during a struggle. Webster said, "That's when I stabbed him. I don't remember how many times. It was a blur. It all happened so fast." Webster stated that Michael Webster stopped wrestling and dropped the knife he was holding. He claimed that his father then turned to pick the knife back up. Mr. Scullion asked, "Did you stab him on this occasion?" Webster said, "I know now that I stabbed him in the side of the neck." Mr. Scullion asked, "What happened at that point?" Webster said, "He fell to the floor." Webster claimed that he panicked and lay on the floor beside his father's body for an unknown period of time. Mr. Scullion asked how he felt, and he replied, "Horrible, just pure shock. Imagining that it wasn't real, trying to tell myself he wasn't dead and this didn't happen." Webster stated that if he got the keys from his father when he asked, he would have ran away. He claimed that he washed his hands in the sink as well as a knife, which he then put in Michael Webster's hand, which he later thought was stupid. Webster then phoned emergency services shortly before 4 a.m. Mr. Scullion asked his client if he meant to hurt or kill Michael Webster, and he replied, "No." The trial continues before Judge Los Matthews, and that report was by Connor Gordon. From the Glasgow Times, Saturday the 16th of March, from the sports section, Celtic 3, St Johnstone 1, instant reaction to the burning issues, report by Matthew Lindsay. Celtic leapfrog Rangers into top spot in the Saints Premiership table at Parkhead this afternoon when they strolled to a comfortable 3-1 win over St Johnstone thanks to goals from Kyogo Furuhashi, Nicholas Kuhn and James Forrest. If their Ibrox rivals defeat Dundee tomorrow afternoon at Dens Park, where they triumphed 5-0 in their last visit to Tayside back at the start of November, they will fall 2 points behind once again. However, the Govan club, who had a mentally and physically draining Europa League match against Benfica on Thursday evening, will certainly be feeling under a little more pressure to perform in the lunchtime fixture after this result. Furuhashi put the defending Scottish champions ahead 6 minutes before half-time, Kuhn doubled their lead earlier in the second half, and Forrest came off the bench and added a third. Conor Smith pulled one back for the visitors with 9 minutes remaining, after Joe Hart had saved a Stevie May header, but the final outcome was never in doubt. Here are 5 talking points from the encounter. Celtic class. Brendan Rodgers had been far from happy with how his charges had acquitted themselves in the Scottish Gas Scottish Cup quarter-final win over Livingston last Sunday, despite the 4-2 triumph they recorded. Whatever the Northern Irishman said to his charges during training at Lennoxdown this week in the wake of the flat display clearly had the desired impact. They were much approved against St Johnstone today. The McDermott Park club kept the scoreline level for nearly 40 minutes, but Cameron Carter-Vickers, Daisa Maeda and Tomoki Iwata all had shots cleared off the line, and Dimitar Mitov also palmed a powerful volley from Iwata wide before Furuhashi broke the deadlock. Celtic were up against struggling opponents whose ambition this term is simply to remain in the division. Still, they played with a far better tempo and much more creativity. Their manager will be looking for more of the same when the club football resumes after the international break. Furuhashi Fizz. The Japanese internationalist has not, despite plundering 15 goals for club and country in the 2023-24 campaign, been his usual effervescent and ruthless self up front in the last few months. Norwich City loanee Adam Ida was preferred to the PFA Scotland and Scottish Football Writers Association of the Player of the Year in the games against Motherwell, Hearts and Livingston. But Furuhashi came on and netted in the triumph over the latter last weekend, and he was restored to the starting lineup this afternoon. He really should have broken the deadlock when Kuhn sent him through and Mitov with a lob over the top of the St Johnston defence. He took too many touches and squandered the chance. He had the ball in the back of the net moments later when he dove and chested a Paul Bernardo cross in from a few yards out. But assistant referee Callum Spence raised his flag immediately, and a VAR check subsequently proved him correct. Furuhashi, though, stuck at it and was rewarded for his perseverance 5 minutes before half time. He got on the end of another Kuhn delivery and headed home. On this occasion, the new technology showed he was not offside. Scorer turned provider and provider turned scored in the first minute of the second half. Furuhashi squared across goal and Kuhn had the simplest of tasks to side foot beyond Mitov. The striker put in a power of work in the final third. He chased down every ball and did not give the St Johnston defenders a second to relax. He received a standing ovation when he made way for Ida with 20 minutes left on the clock. Could the rest he has received mean he's back to his very best for the run-in? On this evidence, it is a possibility. CCV confidence. Celtic fans were relieved to see Cameron Carter-Vickers, who missed the Livingston Cup tie due to a minor niggle, back in the side at the centre-half today. The United States internationalist dovetailed well with Stephen Welsh in the absence of Liam Scales and dealt comfortably with the limited threat which the Perth club posed going forward. The defender, who has donned the captain's armband while Callum McGregor has been sidelined, is so important to the Glasgow club. His teammates seem to take confidence from his considerable presence at the back. Keeping him fit is so important for Celtic. Iwata composure. Celtic have lost their talismanic skipper McGregor at the worst possible time, but there was nothing wrong with how the midfield three performed today. Bernardo, Iwata and Matt O'Reilly bossed proceedings. Iwata sat deep in a 4-1-4-1 formation and pulled the strings for his side. His distribution was excellent and his reading of the game intelligent. He was, too, unfortunate not to score on a couple of occasions, not least in injury time when he headed over from close range. The former G League Player of the Year has big boots to fill, but he's growing into the role with every game and starting to fulfil the potential he showed when he first arrived on these shores last year. Saints alive! Having put in a 4-game losing run in the Premiership behind them with a win over Aberdeen away and a draw with Livingston at home, St Johnston travelled to Glasgow in slightly better spirits. Sven Spranger limping off injured midway through the first half following a collision with Daisy Maeda did nothing to help their cause. But Craig Levein's men were well beaten today. Celtic keeper Joe Hart only had one save of note to make during the course of the 90 minutes. His opposite number, Mitov, who tipped a dipping Matt O'Reilly free kick over his crossbar at 2-0, kept the scoreline semi-respectable for the visitors. With Ross County recording a surprise 2-1 victory over the third place Hearts at home, St Johnston are now just a point above the second bottom Dingwall club, with 8 games remaining. The heat is well and truly on. And that article was by Matthew Lindsay. From the Glasgow Times, Saturday the 16th of March, from the sports section, Celtic boss Rodgers drops Rangers quip over St Patrick's Day plans. By David Irvine. Celtic manager Brendan Rodgers has revealed he won't watch Rangers against Dundee. That's because he'll be busy celebrating St Patrick's Day. The Parkhead manager explained he would have no interest in Scottish Premiership action on Sunday and would instead focus on the celebration of the Irish community worldwide. Celtic leapfrogged Rangers at the Scottish Premiership Summit with a 3-1 win over St Johnstone on Saturday, but Philip Clement's men could regain the lead at Danes Park. Quizzed on whether he'd keep tabs on the match in Dundee, Rogers told Sky Sports, "Well, it's St Patrick's Day tomorrow, so I'll be celebrating St Patrick's Day. There'll be a celebration of the Irish community worldwide. I won't have any interest in any results. We've done our job today, and that's all we can do, and we'll have a good gate day tomorrow." On victory over St Johnstone, Rogers said, "I thought from the start of the game there was a great feeling in the stadium and from the crowd. The players started the game well, and I thought overall it was a very good performance. The only downside was when I made all the changes, our pressing went a little bit passive, and that gave them a little bit more time on the ball than we would have wanted." And, touching on the progress made by January signing Nicholas Cunn, Rogers added, "I think you are starting to see a little bit of why we brought him here. He's very quick. It was just hard for him when he came in, struggling with his teeth and everything medically, but he has shown now that he has strength back up and he's training really well. He obviously puts in a great cross for the first goal, and you see his speed for the second one. We always want our wingers to get in the box. He got himself in there and scored a fantastic goal." And that article was written by David Irvin. From the Glasgow Times, Saturday the 16th of March, from the sports section. Ex-Rangers ace Patterson embarrassed after manager's playful slap. Report by Dave Irvin. Scotland international Nathan Patterson was reportedly left embarrassed after a jocular slap on the head from manager Sean Dyche sparked a row in a training camp. It's claimed the former Rangers starlet was slapped on the head more forcefully than intended by Everton boss Dyche, leading to heated tempers between players and the manager. The Daily Mail report that an otherwise good-natured evening was marred by Dyche's slap, which was reportedly intended to be harmless but led to a row during a meal. It's claimed Patterson, a product of the Rangers Academy, was embarrassed to be at the centre of the incident, with other players left angry over the incident. James Tarkovsky reportedly took Dyche aside after the incident to allow tensions to ease. The report then states Dyche apologised to Patterson over the playful slap row. It's claimed Everton sources have shut down any suggestion of a bust-up, instead suggesting the incident was a clumsy joke that backfired. Everton were in the Algarve for a training camp, and reportedly the rest of the trip went on without any further issue. It's reported the incident was resolved by Friday afternoon, with Patterson involved in the final training session on Friday before Everton flying back to England. And that article was written by David Irvin and read by me, Ian. From the Glasgow Times, 17th of March, from the sports section. Clement defends ref over Dundee versus Rangers call-off, by David Irvin. Philip Clement has defended Don Robertson's call to postpone the match between Dundee and Rangers as the right decision. The Ibrox boss was left disappointed over the late call-off just 90 minutes before the scheduled Scottish Premiership fixture, and Clement bemoaned the match being the sole call-off in Scotland, despite also being selected for live Sky Sports coverage. However, the Belgian took no issue with Robertson's decision to postpone the match, as he defended the decision despite his disappointment. He told BBC Scotland, "I understand the referee. Totally, he made the right decision. You cannot play football on this surface. I think it is clearly in the rules of football that if you throw a ball in the air and it doesn't bounce, you cannot play a game. And then we don't even speak about the safety of the players. You cannot have any stability on this field at this moment. It is a strange thing to have this. I understand if it is 2-3 weeks constant pouring rain, but after maybe one night of rain, to have these circumstances means there was already a problem." Clement added, "It is really dangerous for injuries. We can say yes, 50 or 60 years ago, football was played in these kind of pitches. And that's true, but there has been an evolution as in those times they also played the game with laces in the football. I think it's a very important thing for the future that a league thinks about how to raise the level of pitches and put standards on that like they do other things. They have standards with things like lighting, for example, to have a good broadcast of the game and to have a good product. Sure, the lights are really important, but even more important is the quality of the pitches, I think. And that report was by David Irvin.
Glasgow Times News on Monday, the 18th of March. City man who fled the Nazis dies a month after his 100th birthday. An article written by Rebecca Newlands. A Glasgow man who fled the Nazis has sadly died a month after turning 100. Tributes have been paid to the extraordinary Henry Vuga, who escaped Nazi Germany at the age of 15. He made Glasgow his home and began educating people about the horrors of the Holocaust. Henry's death was announced by the Holocaust Memorial Day Trust yesterday. Chief Executive Olivia Marks-Voldman said the group was heartbroken. Henry was a gentleman, charming, dapper, and above all a force for good, she added. The work that he and his late wife Ingrid did in sharing their testimonies made an immense impact on thousands of people across Scotland. All of us at the Holocaust Memorial Day Trust send our deepest sympathies to his daughters Hilary and Gillian and all his family and loved ones. Thank you for everything, Henry. We will miss you. Former First Minister Nicola Sturgeon led the tributes, saying, "Henry was an extraordinary human being. While the world is a poorer place for his passing, there is no doubt that his life made it better." Alongside his beloved wife Ingrid, Henry educated thousands about the horrors of the Holocaust and the lessons from it that we must never forget. With quiet dignity, he reminded us of the power of love and humanity. He was also full of stories and fun. He will be so enormously missed, but his legacy will endure. First Minister Humza Yousaf also praised Mr. Vuga's impact on the country he came to call home. "I'm devastated to hear of Henry's passing. His loss will be felt by communities right across Scotland and beyond," he posted. "He worked over decades to remind us of the horrors of the Holocaust, which must never be forgotten." Ahead of Mr. Vuga's 100th birthday in February, his local MSP, Jackson Carlow, paid a tribute in Holyrood during First Minister's questions. Mr. Carlow posted on X, formerly known as Twitter, "How joyful it was just last month for us all to celebrate with Henry the reaching of his centenary. Today we mourn his passing and send much love to Hilary, Gillian and the family. In his own quiet way, Henry was a statesman. May his memory be a blessing." Scottish Labour leader Anna Sawar described Mr. Vuga as warm, charming and compassionate, adding, "We owe it to his generation to share their stories and always strive for peace." Henry was born in Nuremberg in 1924 and was able to escape the country thanks to the Kindertransport, that is the children's transport, a humanitarian rescue programme which ran between November 1938 and September 1939. While in Scotland, he was arrested for sending innocent letters to his family, and after he was released, he attended a refugee club in Glasgow. It was there he would meet his future wife Ingrid, and Henry began to build a life in Glasgow, where he worked as a chef. He was honoured with an MBE in 1999 for services to sport for disabled people, recognising his long association as ski bob instructor for the British Limbless Ex-Servicemen Association. An article written by Rebecca Newlands. Glasgow Times, on Monday, the 18th of March. Lifestyle. Glasgow buckles up for the return of a major festival. An article written by Sarah Campbell. In late April of last year, hundreds of people filling a historic building not far from the River Clyde were in high spirits as they raised their clay cups to toast the launch of Scotland's first tequila and mezcal festival. Copita, which returns to the Brigate in Glasgow on Saturday, April the 27th, is the brainchild of co-founders Joanna Nethery, Colin Campbell, Callum Cunneen and Adam Murphy, a team of industry professionals who now say they are committed to making round two even better. "Ms. Nethery told our sister title The Herald, 'It's such a fun day. It's an immersive experience where you come into this sort of three-hour bubble that doesn't exist anywhere else in the city, and the chance to explore tequila or mezcal, share a cocktail with your friends, and meet some great people. Almost everybody last year came in dressed normally and left wearing boots or fringe jackets with a bottle of spirit to take away with them. The chance to invest in occasion wear from the cow people of the Barra's Market undoubtedly played its part in enhancing the visitor experience, but there's no mistaking the deep-rooted love for all things mezcal and tequila, which inspired the festival's first edition. Ms. Nethery, the owner of 5 March, previously spent years living in Mexico, where she came to appreciate the vast heritage and cultural importance of the agave-based spirit. Sylvan owner Mr. Campbell, on the other hand, has ample experience in curating drinks festivals, which allows him a unique perspective on the similarities shared by two very different countries. He said, "There's a story to tell with mezcal and tequila, which is very similar to that of whiskey in Scotland. It's rooted in our cultures and intrinsic to each nation's character. Specifically, in the way mezcal is made in small batches and artisanally by people who have passed the craft down through generations. There are a lot of new distilleries in Scotland, which is refreshing to see, and I feel like whiskey, tequila and mezcal represent that process of handmade spirits." Closer to home, as well-established figures in Glasgow's hospitality scene, Ms. Nethery and Mr. Campbell speak of a long-standing, if-you-know-you-know type of buzz surrounding the irresistibly sippable tipple. Mezcal, especially when you're talking about its range of flavours, is such an interesting spirit to have in a cocktail or to drink neat, Ms. Nethery explained. "We both opened bars when we were quite young, and when you have that kind of background, you come to realise it's very much a bartender spirit. You can almost tell that someone works at a bar because they'll order a mezcal cocktail. People in the spirits industry have been geeking out on it for quite a long time." For those who are less familiar with mezcal or tequila, there's no need to worry. Included in the £35 ticket price for the festival is the opportunity to responsibly sample up to 80 different agave-based spirits during a 3.5-hour session, with brand ambassadors who are happy to fill you in on the basics of each bottle as they top up your souvenir copita. Showing off the incredible versatility of tequila and mezcal, some of the city's best mixologists have been recruited to run the bar, serving bespoke cocktails that are best enjoyed when paired with a serving of tacos from Glasgow's own Rafa's. There will also be the opportunity to purchase tickets for in-depth masterclasses hosted by industry experts, with a full programme to be released in the weeks leading up to the event. Asked why they decided to launch the first festival of its kind in Glasgow, Mr. Campbell replied, "Glasgow deserves events like these. People here love to go out, whether that's just for a drink or to something like the Comedy Festival, Celtic Connections or the Glasgow Film Festival. When you compare the city to Edinburgh, which has one big month in focus each year, there's always something going on in Glasgow. We want to help fill up that calendar," Ms. Nethery concurred. While confident they'll be able to recreate the electric atmosphere of the inaugural event in just a few weeks' time, this year's festival will look slightly different for Ms. Nethery, who will by then be 8 months pregnant. There are no signs of slowing down once the day is done, however, as the team looks to host their first Copita Festival outside of Scotland, in Manchester, with whispers of yet another drinks event planned for Glasgow this summer. She continued, "It's not been an easy time for bars or restaurants, and with a kid on the way, we have questioned whether we should sell up or look for jobs elsewhere. But we're Glaswegian, we're we scrappers who will work to prove our point and show that we can make something like this happen while making sure everyone is well paid and looked after." That in itself links back to so many mezcal producers who have turned down huge international deals to mass market their spirits. It would have made them incredibly wealthy, but they've said no because if they can't do it themselves, they're just not interested. "It's incredible to be able to put on an event like this in the city, and this year we're really going for it." An article written by Sarah Campbell. Glasgow Times on Monday, the 18th of March. Lifestyle. Twinkle Toad performers prepare for Prague stage. an exclusive article written by Morgan Carmichael. A Glasgow dance school is gearing up for its biggest achievement yet this summer. A total of 18 children from the JA Academy of Dance and Technique, which is based in Denniston, will be representing Team Scotland as they're set to head to Prague to compete in the Dance World Cup. Julianne Andrew, principal, owner and choreographer of JA Academy, told the Glasgow Times, "It's just incredible that we qualified. We're all just completely blown away. This is the hardest competition that these girls will ever do because it's against the whole world, so to speak. It's the school's biggest achievement." The children were ecstatic when they found out. "We had tears and laughter. It means so much to them. They train so hard and this is a prestigious competition. We're overwhelmed." After taking part in a regional competition to qualify for the World Cup, the team was one of around four selected to represent the country. The 18 girls managed to qualify in 23 routines across solos, duets and teams, which Julianne said blew her away. To make it even more special, this was the team's first year entering the qualifiers and cup after the school opened only 2 years ago. Julianne said, "We went in for the experience and we didn't know what was going to happen, so the fact that we qualified is unbelievable. It's incredible that this was our first year entering and that we managed to qualify with 23 routines. I'm feeling really proud." The competition will run from June the 27th until July the 6th, where the team will compete against hundreds of other competitors in each category. They'll face several other countries, including Japan, the USA and Spain. The dance school has started doing a couple of their own fundraisers, as the competition will cost around £2,500 for each competitor. Julianne said, "We've all been working really hard in the background to fundraise a bit. We will of course go, despite the costs, but funds are a challenge on their own." An exclusive article written by Morgan Carmichael. Glasgow Times, on Monday the 18th of March. Opinion. Will the Hate Crime Act create more problems than it solves? A column written by Mike Daly. April Fool's Day sees the coming into force of the controversial Hate Crime and Public Order Scotland Act 2021. The Scottish Government claims that the 2021 Act simply modernises Scots law. There have been criminal offences of stirring up hatred against a group of persons described by race or ethnicity in Scotland since the 1986 Public Order Act. There have been criminal offences of stirring up hatred against a group of persons defined by race or ethnicity in Scotland since the 1986 Public Order Act. Under the 1986 Act, to establish a racial hatred offence, there must be conduct of threatening, abusive or insulting words, behaviour, material, images or sounds. The prosecution must show that the accused intended the conduct to stir up racial hatred, or that racial hatred was likely to be stirred up by it. The 2021 Act also creates new standalone crimes of stirring up hatred against groups defined by characteristics of age, disability, religion, sexual orientation, transgender identity, and variations in sex characteristics. However, from the 2009 Offences Aggravation by Prejudice Scotland Act, we already had aggravated hate crimes in relation to disability, religion, sexual orientation and transgender identity. 64% of hate crime charges in Scotland involve threatening or abusive behaviour under the 2010 Criminal Justice and Licensing Scotland Act. Latest Crown Office figures revealed 5,738 hate crime reports in 2022-2023. Most were for race crime, with 3,145 reports, which was 31% lower than in 2011-2012. The second most commonly reported hate crime was in relation to sexual orientation. Why is the 2021 Act controversial? Some women's rights groups and legal commentators worry that it will be weaponised by gender ideology campaigners to silence critics from expressing freedom of speech. Last week, India Willoughby, a trans woman, reported J.K. Rowling to Northumbria Police for misgendering her on the X platform. The police said the complaint did not meet the criminal threshold. Are we going to see an avalanche of reports to Police Scotland about social media spats? That would be worrying at a time when the police have said they are no longer able to investigate minor crimes. Police Scotland's April 2021 guidance on hate crime is problematic. It states, a hate crime is any crime which is perceived by the victim or any other person to be motivated wholly or partly by malice and ill will towards a social group. Section 4 of the 2021 Act makes it clear that the test for criminal conduct is what a reasonable person would consider to be threatening or abusive. In other words, the key test is objective and not subjective. That's important, as the way the legislation is drafted, anyone in Scotland will be able to report a tweet they didn't like, posted by people on the other side of the planet. Police Scotland say they'll investigate every complaint under the 2021 Act. Just how that will work in practice is anyone's guess. Police Scotland's guidance also states, if the facts do not identify a recordable crime, but the victim perceives it to be a hate crime, the circumstances will be recorded as a hate incident, non-crime incident. The prospect of innocent people having a slew of adverse data recorded against them seems insidious and illiberal. Will the new legislation cause more problems than it seeks to resolve? Will it go the way of the Offensive Behaviour at Football and Threatening Communications, Scotland Act 2012, and be repealed? We shall need to wait and see. A column written by Mike Daly. Glasgow Times News on Monday, the 18th of March. Wonka event organiser claims his life is ruined. An article written by Rebecca Newlands. The organiser of the disastrous Willy Wonka event has broken his silence in a new Channel 5 documentary. Billy Cool has said his life has been ruined by the event in the programme, which explored the planning and execution of the immersive experience. The chaotic event took place at a warehouse in the city's White Inch, and hundreds of families forked out £35 each to attend. The advert from organisers House of Illuminati promised a paradise of sweet treats, an enchanted garden containing giant sweets and mysterious sculptures. It also advertised an imagination lab with mind-expanding projections and optical marvels. However, the event didn't go according to plan, and the police were even called as families turned up to an almost empty warehouse, which left children in tears. But House of Illuminati director Mr. Cool insists he is not a scammer in the documentary, which aired on Saturday night. He added, "My life has been turned upside down. My life is ruined." He claims he has had hundreds of messages of abuse, with people even telling him to kill himself. He added, "It's not a nice feeling to be under the microscope. I was getting hundreds and hundreds calling me the most awful names, saying I'm a villain, I'm a horrific dad, I'm better off dead, I should kill myself. I was devastated and I was sick to the pit of my stomach. I had a whole host of emotions." As parents are still out of pocket following the event, Mr. Cool said he is in the process of refunding and is going through many emails. He said, "I'm not a scam artist, I'm not a con man or anything like that. I've gone through the transactions individually. They're still ongoing. If people haven't received a refund, I have gone through many emails and said to people, if you've not had your refund, contact your bank, as they may have processes in place to be able to help it. I've genuinely done what I can. Because of everything that had happened, it ran into my personal life. I've lost my friends and the love of my life. I was made out to be the face of all evil, when genuinely that is really not the case." An article written by Rebecca Newlands. Glasgow Times News on Monday, the 18th of March. Tens of millions set to be cut from the health and care budget. A front page article written by Stuart Patterson. Services will be cut, jobs lost, and longer waits for services as tens of millions of pounds is cut from the city's health and social care budget. The Integrated Joint Board, a partnership between the Council and the Health Board, meets on Wednesday to set its budget for 2024-2025. It faces a shortfall of £36.4 million, with almost half from social work services. The plans to balance the budget include more than 150 jobs lost and an increase in charges for services. It will see 90 health jobs cut and 62 council posts to go. There will be a 5% increase in charges and a 12.8% rise for hot meal charges. The plans also include a £3.3 million cut from prescribing services, £3.5 million from the Maximising Independence Scheme to help people live at home, and £2.1 million from children and families. There will be a 10% cut in the Alcohol and Drug Partnership budget. Last week it was revealed that the number of drug deaths in the Greater Glasgow area had rocketed by 41% to 303 people. On the job losses, the report states a range of options will be used to minimise the impact on employees, including the non-filling of vacancies, the use of natural attrition, and redeployment of staff where appropriate. For the council posts, it is noted there may need to be voluntary redundancy or early retirement packages offered. The proposals include a £15.5 million cut from social work services and another £8 million mentioned, which comes with a warning there is a risk that the board will not meet its statutory duties. The Chief Social Work Officer warned that services cannot be stopped for existing users, so budgets for new demand will require to be curtailed. It states, it's clear to make a balanced budget, the reduction in service requires to take place, and despite our transformation agenda, there will be reduced funding for many of our core packages of support. Staff will require to work with the service users regarding the impact to ensure that we do not leave the most vulnerable in our society at unacceptable risk. This will mean that the threshold for access to social work services will be increased, and the level of non-essential support will be decreased. Depending on demand, service users who require services may need to wait for packages of support being offered, but social work services will prioritise those with the greatest need and those at risk of harm. Overtime pay for working public holidays will be slashed for staff, with a double time payment cut for 6 out of the 12 and a half public holidays. Union members from Unison, Unite and GMB are planning to stage a protest against the cuts in the city tomorrow, ahead of the meeting on Wednesday. A front page article written by Stuart Patterson.
Glasgow Times, Tuesday the 19th of March, from the Lifestyle section. Forgotten children buried in Glasgow graves, remembered as school turns 150. It was an unassuming headstone at Glasgow Necropolis, inscribed with the names of 29 children and one nurse, which first sparked Ian Hutchison's interest in East Park School. On a walk through the graveyard, I noticed this stone on the main pathway, he explains. These would have been some of the poorest children in the city, from the back winds of High Street, who might otherwise have been buried in unmarked graves and forgotten about. Here they were all recorded, with compassion, by the home. It set me off on my journey, researching the school's history. Ian and co-author Moira Hawthorne have written East Park, 150 Years of Compassion, a book about the history of the Maryhill Institution to mark its milestone birthday. As part of the anniversary, the school has been researching East Park children buried in the necropolis grave, whose names have not been recorded, and in other graves at the cemetery, at the Western Necropolis and in Largs, in a bid to identify and remember the forgotten young people. It is one of many fascinating insights into East Park, revealed in the new book, to which the Glasgow Times was given an exclusive first look ahead of its publication on March the 21st. East Park first opened its doors on September the 16th, 1874, as a residential hospital school for children with serious illness and disabilities. At the time, Maryhill was surrounded by countryside, and the idea was to give sick children a chance to breathe fresh air far from the bustling city. It has evolved in a school for young people who have complex additional needs, many of whom live off campus in supported accommodation. Part of the original cottage, which could accommodate up to 50 children, still stands today, and its distinctive spire is a local landmark. The fact that the school still stands in the same location, with some of the same buildings, is an achievement, especially when you consider it almost closed in the 1990s, explains Moira, whose background is in social work, and who was a member of the East Park Board of Trustees for almost a decade. It has been absolutely fascinating researching the history of the school, but for me it has been talking to people connected to East Park, which has brought everything to life. She adds, smiling, there are so many fantastic stories. One of my favourites came from a former pupil, a woman called Elizabeth, who talked about sneaking out to buy chips after the nurses had done their nighttime rounds. They'd sprinkle eau de toilette over the beds afterwards to disguise the smell. The book does not shy away from some of the more difficult periods in the school's history. The challenge of evacuating the children almost overnight during World War II, when Maryhill was bombed, for example, and the threat of takeover by the NHS. It also discusses the challenges associated with the pandemic, although, as Moira and Ian point out, COVID was not unprecedented for East Park. The influenza pandemic between 1918 and 1920, which became known as Spanish flu, was not widely reported by newspapers at the time, even though millions of people died. The UK government, concerned about the effects on public morale after the war and the Bolsheviks' revolution in Russia in 1917, played down the impact of the virus, which was attacking the young and fit. In the book, Moira and Ian include thoughts by visiting surgeon Wilson Bruce on October 6, 1919, who wrote, "In the early months of this year, 1919, during the epidemic of influenza in Glasgow, we had a trying and anxious time. Many of the children had high temperatures with chest complications, and in some a distinct pneumonia was present. Several deaths were due to that cause. 12 of the staff were ill with influenza, inclusive of the matron, Kathleen Jameson, along with the specially trained nurse brought in to help during the emergency and myself. The nurses who kept well during the epidemic gave willing and much appreciated help." The authors believe the book will appeal to a wide range of readers, not just those connected to the school or those interested in how approaches to education and children's health have evolved in the last 150 years. So many people in the local community, when they find out what we are researching, have told us they're really interested in the book, says Moira. "I think it will really appeal to the people of Glasgow, and in particular Maryhill, where the school has been part of the community for so long." That was an article by Anne Fotheringham. The National, Thursday the 14th of March, from the news section. Owen Thompson, Westminster working to limit voices of SNP. An MP has claimed there are a number of things happening at Westminster to limit ways the SNP and smaller parties can voice their opinions in the Commons. The SNP's chief whip, Owen Thompson, made the claims to the National after he received a letter from the three deputy speakers to say Keir Starmer will not be referred to the Privileges Committee for investigation over accusations he pressured Lindsay Hoyle into selecting his party's amendment on Gaza last month. SNP, Conservative and Plaid Cymru MPs had requested an investigation after chaos ensued in the Commons when Hoyle broke with convention to select the Labour amendment. The original SNP motion, calling for a ceasefire and accusing Israel of collective punishment, was never voted on, and instead Labour's amendment, which did not reference collective punishment, was nodded through. The episode led to accusations Starmer had threatened the Speaker amid fears he may face a major revolt. but all three deputy speakers unanimously confirmed in a leaked letter they would not be taking requests for an investigation any further. Asked about whether it felt like a third kick in the teeth for the SNP, after they also had an emergency debate on Gaza refused, Thompson said, "There appears to be a number of things happening in here. Westminster just now, which seems to be limiting the options for us as a third party, but also for smaller parties to be able to voice their opinions and show our discontent when we're not happy with stuff. We are looking at them very closely. We need to have the ability to be heard." Thompson would not expand on what exactly the party was concerned about, but insisted he would not let bigger parties ride roughshod over us. The letter, addressed to Thompson, the Conservatives' Graham Brady and Plaid Cymru's Liz Saville Roberts, said there was a high bar for raising complaints of breach of privilege. They ruled, "The Speaker's role requires his conversations with members to remain confidential. All parties should be able to rely on that confidentiality, allowing matters of privilege to be raised on the content of confidential conversations would undermine that principle. There are no direct accounts of what was said from anyone who was actually in the room. We have decided not to give this matter precedence. Our decision is unanimous." Thompson insisted it was not necessary to find out the specifics of what was said between Starmer and Hoyle, but maintained there needed to be a better understanding of what went on. He said, "It should be recognised this letter was sent in confidence, and I accepted that, and that is why I kept it so. But now it's in the public domain. I'll say I'm disappointed, because the reason I and others supported the call for an investigation is because we believe there are still questions that need to be answered. Processes in the Commons were overruled, and whatever was said to anyone over the process, we can't get away from the fact Keir Starmer intervened in some shape or form with a request that standing orders and the conventions of the House were overruled, and that isn't good enough. You don't need to get into the specifics of who said what. There is no dispute over the fact Keir Starmer had a meeting and Labour were actively trying to get their amendments selected against the advice of Parliament clerks, as is clear from their letter that was published on the day of the vote. So that we need to know is why they thought it was appropriate the rules of the House should be ignored for their political benefit." Saville Roberts, Plaid Cymru's leader at Westminster, added, "There are fundamental questions about the state of democracy in Westminster, and this only adds to them. A democracy based on gentlemen's agreements and just between you and me conversations in dark corners can make no claim to transparency and public accountability. Almost 100 MPs signed a motion of no confidence in Hoyle following his actions on the SNP opposition day. Starmer categorically denied having threatened the Speaker and claimed he simply urged Hoyle to have the broadest possible debate by putting a number of options in front of MPs during the debate." That was an article by Steph Braun.
This is from the Glasgow Times on the 20th of March 2024. From the news section, and the headline reads, "Cyclist has died after being hit by HGV in Bearsden." This article is by Ben Waddle. A cyclist has died after being hit by HGV on a busy road near Glasgow. The incident took place on Manse Road just after the junction with Drymen Road in Bearsden, shortly after 8 a.m. on Tuesday, March 19th. 999 crews rushed to the accident. However, a 56-year-old woman who was the cyclist was tragically pronounced dead at the scene. The HGV driver, who was a man, was not injured during the crash. Following the incident, the road was closed for several hours to allow crash investigations to take place. It reopened shortly after 1 p.m. Now, an investigation to establish the full circumstances of the crash is underway. Meanwhile, road cops are urging anyone with information to come forward. Sergeant Chris Hoggins of Police Scotland's Road Policing Unit said, My thoughts are with the families and friends of the deceased at this difficult time. I would urge anyone who may have been in the area around the time of the crash and witnessed what took place, or has any dashcam footage which could assist, to please get in touch with officers. A spokesperson for Police Scotland added, anyone with information is urged to contact Police Scotland on 101, quoting reference number 0590 of March 19th. This article was by Ben Waddle.
From Glasgow Times, Wednesday, 20th of March, Lifestyle section, final acts announced for Summer Nights at the Bandstand by Morgan Carmichael. The final two acts have just been announced to complete this year's Summer Nights at the Bandstand in Glasgow. Emily Sandé will perform with her band on Saturday, July the 27th, and Glasgow's favourite Brummies, Ocean Colour Scene, will belt out their greatest hits from the stage on Wednesday, July 31st. The two acts will join a lineup of acts like Bananarama and Echo and the Bunnymen. Mark Mackay, director of Regular Music, said, "We are delighted to announce our final two shows for this year's Summer Nights at the Bandstand. Both artists have very close ties to Glasgow and jumped at the chance to join us on our celebration of 100 years of the Bandstand and complete what is one of our strongest lineups yet. Both shows go on sale on Friday, March the 22nd at 9 a.m. Tickets can be purchased from ticketmaster.co.uk. That article was written by Morgan Carmichael. From Glasgow Times, Wednesday, 20th of March, Lifestyle section, food festival to bring a taste of Africa and the Caribbean to Glasgow. An exclusive by Nicole Mitchell. An exciting new festival is set to celebrate the diversity of Scotland's African and Caribbean food and drink scene. Scotland's Larder will take place in Glasgow next month, with vibrant food stalls offering cuisine from Kenya to Jamaica, with a market full of fresh food, herbs and spices. The festival promises to celebrate the rich tapestry of African and Caribbean food and drinks cultures and give those attending the chance to try food they might have not yet got to experience. Jacine Utasikwa, who is a co-founder of festival partner Matuga Distillers, came up with the idea for the festival as she wanted to create an experience similar to markets in London where she grew up. She explained, "In the time I've been in Scotland, I've never really been to an event that united African and Caribbean food and drink producers. So the opportunity came when Scotland Food and Drink issued funding for projects across Scotland through the Regional Food Fund, and we secured funding for the inaugural larder. Larder is a Swahili word meaning taste or flavour." Jacine says they decided to name the festival Scotland's Larder, as the word larder is often used when describing Scottish produce. She said, "This is an alternative to Scotland's Larder, showcasing African and Caribbean excellence. It's allowing us to feast, mingle, and introduce our cultural heritage to new communities and even amongst African and Caribbean nations get to know each other's food." She added, "We want people to come with a hungry belly to explore. This is a discovery day. Food, I think, for all our cultures is so important. It's nourishment, but it's the communal aspect to it as well. This ritual nourished us, and it nourished my grandparents when they first came over from Jamaica. The festival will bring together African and Caribbean producers from across Scotland, including Matuga Distillers, Island Slice, Rafiki Coffee, and Soul Food Sisters. People will have the chance to enjoy food and drink items such as Nigerian Puff Puff, Jollof Rum, and Jamaican Patties, as well as buy groceries to cook with at home. There will also be a series of masterclasses such as Spice It Up! African Spice Mastery, and a Launch Your Food and Drinks Business as well as live entertainment. Organisers hope that not only will the event tantalise the taste buds of those attending, but it will also help introduce people to African and Caribbean food they may not have had the chance to try before. Enoch Adeyemi, co-founder of festival partner Novate Hub, said, "It's an opportunity to bless our host country with their delicacies because they've been exposed to Chinese delicacies, Indian delicacies, Italian delicacies, but I don't think they've had the opportunity to get a feel for what we've got to offer. We think this platform will be a starting point for them to come in, have a look, and then have a bite here and there. Hopefully, this will be the first of what will be an exciting journey." Oni Ini Igbokwe, Programme Director at Novate Hub, hopes the festival will help people have a better understanding of people they may know with African or Caribbean heritage. She said, "I feel like people should go with the taste of home." Like Larder implies, it's the taste of home for us, so we're hoping people will come in and feel like they've been immersed in our culture just by being there and eating the food. There'll be music, there'll be vibes as well. So I hope people feel like they've been transported to Africa or the Caribbean. Vanessa Gilpin is the director of festival partner and Munch, as well as the founder of Gathering Ground, CIC, in Hamilton Hill. She says she believes the African and Caribbean food scene is still finding its feet in Scotland, but is hopeful the festival will raise the profile of small shops and restaurants. She said, "You go to African Caribbean restaurants, but they tend to be chains and they're visited by a wide demographics of people because of the location they're in. But it's mostly African and Caribbean people that attend local smaller shops. So I think bringing these types of foods to everyone in the form of a festival is going to raise the profile of the shops people may walk past because they're not familiar with it." Fiona Richmond, Head of Regional Food in Scotland Food and Drink, added, "I am delighted to see Scotland's Larder 2024 come to fruition. The festival is not only a celebration of the vibrant African and Caribbean culinary traditions, but also a testament to the rich diversity and innovation within Scotland's food and drink industry. Through the Regional Food Fund, Scotland Food and Drink is proud to support such initiatives that promote inclusivity, cultural exchange, and the appreciation of food as a unifying force. Scotland's Larder 2024 will take place at the G7 Conference Centre in Glasgow on Saturday, April the 27th, with two sessions held from 11 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. and from 3:30 p.m. until 7 p.m. Standard entry costs £10, with limited time early bird tickets costing £7.50. Children under 15 enter free of charge. That article was an exclusive by Nicole Mitchell.
That concludes this week's edition of the Glasgow Times podcast. Please remember to subscribe to our channels at Q and Review and to tell your friends about our service.